Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. Today's show is going to be a lot of fun. I love it. I love all my shows, and that's where I get in trouble because I'm like, okay, this is my favorite show. I love all of my shows, but the shows that interest me the most are when guests appear to be so different, when their backgrounds are different, and you go, how can these people possibly have anything in common, anything to talk about? But somehow, some way, by the end of the show, we found out that we have more in common than we do that is different. So before I go ahead and introduce today's guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone somewhere who needs to learn everything we're sharing this morning. So whether they're asleep, eating, gardening, walking the dog, whatever it is, send them a message, send them a tweet, send them a text, send them an inbox, post it out on social media, and let people know the Roundtable Talk Show is live. So while you're announcing the show and letting everyone know that the show is live, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our very first guest, Ms. Chelsea Baldwin. Chelsea is a multi-business entrepreneur and the founder of Business Bitch LLC. She helps new and growing entrepreneurs create a solid foundation for their business and reach the 300,000 per year threshold so they can continue their growth upward. Her specialties include coaching freelancers, small agency owners, digital product sellers, and consultants. Good morning, Chelsea. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great.
I'm excited to be here. When I read your bio and I saw the name of your company, I said, okay. I don't even know if I can say that, but hey, it's Facebook, so I really should be able to say whatever it is that I want. So how did you come up with that name?
You know, I was in my first business before I ever had Business Bitch, and I did a launch that, you know, and usually my launches did pretty well. This one did not do so well, and I'd been a little unsatisfied with the company for a little while, so I took some time off to kind of figure out how to regroup and move forward. And I was getting this idea for business coaching because business coaching was something that I got a request for multiple times under my copywriting agency, which was my first company. So I was taking some time off to figure out how to like separate that, how to keep it like not confusing. Like, do I do copywriting or business coaching? Like, what's the deal? And I was just taking a shower one day and the idea for that name hit me. Cool things that I could do with that name started coming in. So as soon as I got out, I started researching, was businessbitch.com taken? It was not. Was the name legally available? It was. And then so I bought the URL and I started working with a lawyer to like pin it down to make sure I got it and, you know, get the trademark stuff going because that takes a good little while. And yeah, I just kind of saw that it wasn't available. So I took it because it seemed like a great name.
Now, and I'm just going to look at it from a different perspective. There mm-hmm. may be, because I love to ask questions that I feel the audience may be wondering. There mm-hmm. may be people who have said, you know what, just using that word, using that image, especially in business, puts us back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, that we want to get away from that image, from that whole the devil wears Prada image to a softer side of women. What do you say to them?
You know, there's different things for different people, different cups of tea for everybody. I'm definitely not for everyone, but for people who really resonate with my message of getting to the heart of it, getting shit done. Like, one of the things that I say a lot of times with my audience is impatience is a virtue, and harnessing that impatience to just like push through and make things happen and not sit around and be fluffy and soft and just waiting for things to happen. That really resonates with a lot of people. So they can work with me. They can work with my courses, my products, my coaching. And if not, there's definitely people out there to serve that. So there's something for everyone.
I like your answer, but I'm one of those people. What resonates with me is I feel that when a woman is strong, when a woman is powerful, when a woman especially is direct, people go, oh, she's a bitch. And it's not what she said. It's not how she said it. It's just the fact that she's assertive, you know, and people like, it's like, that's how they see us, I think, sometimes, no matter what. So it's just like it owning is. It.
Yeah. And I mean, in my personal life, I'm definitely not a bitch, but like, I am just impatient. I'm a go-getter. I'm an overachiever. So I've definitely dealt with like people putting that on me and calling me that. And it's not true, but it's sort of, so it's maybe sort of a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but it's just like, you know what, whatever, I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to embrace it. And the people who resonate with it, and there are a lot of people, are going to be fully on board. And that's what I found. And those who are not, and that's fine. They can go elsewhere. You know, not one coach can help everyone in business. So you have to do what's right for you and what works for you and what resonates with you. But I have found that people are definitely hungry for like that impatience is a virtue message for like, let's just cut through the crap and get the shit done and achieve our goals instead of waiting around and like twiddling our thumbs and hoping it happens. Like, let's make it happen.
Yes. Have you had anyone whose response was, you with that name gave me the freedom, you know, to maybe be a bitch in business?
Yeah, I think it's empowered people to be okay with being impatient, to just like go for it instead of just sitting around and waiting or feeling like they shouldn't be as much of an overachiever as they are. Yeah, I think so. I think it's, I mean, nobody's has said to me like, oh, you really gave me the permission to be a bitch, like those words verbatim, but they have told me like, yes, that like your message just really, you know, helped me light that fire, reignite it and just go forward and get this stuff done. And now I'm much happier that I've gotten it done.
Mm-hmm. Are you a podcaster?
Yes.
Let's talk about your podcast.
Okay. Yeah. So it's called the Business Bitch Podcast. It's on Apple and Spotify. And in those episodes, like what I tried to do is like feature people who are business owners who are maybe not the typical ones who are on podcasts, because like I want to show different sides of business and different business models and different ways to go about just making money for yourself. And there's just a lot to learn there. So I'm always trying to cover all the topics that there's a demand for. So there's the business model side, and then there's like the business help side. So I've got like a lawyer on an episode talking about all the legal things that people face and are confused about when they're just getting started, or health insurance for being self-employed. Like that's a big issue. But I've also got like business models, like being a tattoo artist or owning a cleaning business or starting a business without a website or selling e-commerce products. Also freelancing and just all the different things. So I tried to like cover it and just give help to people, to give them like the actionable things that they need that they can do
for their business. Advance.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to come back to you, Chelsea, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Rajesh Kadam. He runs an enterprise B2B marketing agency in Silicon Valley and works with leading edge startups. He loves evangelizing about the startup ecosystem and what makes companies and individuals succeed. Good morning, Rajesh. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Thank you.
You're an evangelist.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I think I've lived in Silicon Valley for 15 years now, and startups is the thing here. So I've always been passionate about technology and, you know, technology helping solve some of the problems that we face as human beings. And I think technology has done that quite well. We see that with the vaccine, for example, right? That's the latest one we can think of. So yeah, that's just an interest of mine. And that's been my full-time work as well. So I like it.
Have you always been an entrepreneur?
Yes, I started my first business actually as a undergraduate student when I was in college. Yeah, I was selling aquariums to hotels. Me and a friend of mine, we got together. And so I guess so. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time.
Okay, so I just want to make sure you were selling aquariums. So aquariums meaning they hold fish, right?
Yeah. So how did this start? Well, this is back in India. I was much younger at the time, and I was interested in pets and got a small aquarium for myself and really, you know, got into it and found a niche, like putting aquariums in hotel lobbies, actually. So of course you couldn't cart it out like that. So there's a whole process to it. And the companies loved it, right? I mean, they had somebody who can install it, maintain it, and not worry about it. And so.
Wow. But that's a skill. You know what I mean? I'm going to stop saying the ability to sell ice to Eskimos and start saying the ability to sell aquariums to hotels. Like, that's a gift.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think being an entrepreneur, as probably everybody on the panel will agree, is all about articulating and providing value, right? I mean, that's all it is, really. The moment that there is value, I think the idea takes off. And people, of course, want to be part of it.
Absolutely. But after selling aquariums to hotels, now your focus is marketing, B2B marketing. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So just for, folks who may not be aware, so B2B is in contrast to B2C, right? So consumer marketing versus enterprise or business to business marketing. So I've spent the last decade or more marketing to other companies, marketing technology. So, all the startups that I work with have all been in technology, and they sell technology to other companies, right? So that is what is enterprise, B2B marketing. And then you could be selling to either SMB folks, right? Small, medium businesses, or to larger enterprises, say to a Cisco or a Coca-Cola and so on and so forth, right? So that's where I've spent a lot of time. And even within that, there's a lot of different things, right? I think Chelsea just spoke about podcasts, for example. So you produce podcasts, webinars, where you maybe have a thought leader talking about the product or about the ecosystem of the industry. You produce content in the form of, data sheets, white papers, et cetera. Then there's the question of, we live in a world where a lot of data is being churned out, massive amounts on a day-to-day basis. And as a marketer, you got to figure out how to feel that onslaught of data coming at you and how to automate the whole process so that you can actually make the selling process efficient and doable. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my specialty. So these days I spend some bit of time thinking just about how using AI or automation.
I got a project for you. I might have to hire you and retain you to solve one of my biggest problems. Everyone loves the round table talk show, but it's not technically a podcast since it sits on Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to automate this process to grab the content and upload it to all of the podcast hosting companies like Spotify and all of that. But we'll talk online, but wrap your genius around my problem. And while you do that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is Mr. Marco Vitale. Marco is an award-winning audio branding executive, creative director, music producer, and world-class violinist, who has not only crafted some of the world's most impactful sonic brands, but has also collaborated as writer, producer, and musician with Grammy-winning artists like Wu-Tang Clan, Quincy Jones, Nile Rodgers, CeeLo Green, Q-Tip, Pete Rock, Organized Noize, and Peter Wolf. Marco founded Focused Sonic Branding Agency Sonic Lens in 2019 to introduce the world's most data-forward, insight, and strategy-driven approach to sonic branding through a proprietary process called Music Intelligence. Good morning, Marco. How are you?
Good morning. Sorry I gave you another tongue twister there.
Yes, I was a little...
That was the biggest run-on sentence ever.
It's okay.
Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. I love your background. It is so beautiful. I love the art, the artist, the music. It's just, it seems like a wonderful place to work.
It is. It's my inspiration. Mm-hmm. Like a museum, I need to find my muses here because I deal with a lot of creative people. So mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy. This is a result of COVID, by the way. I turned my attic into an office and I don't want to leave it ever again.
Yeah,
that's working for me.
Are like that though. That's one of the main questions I've asked over the last few months is, are you going to go back to the office? And people are like, no, I'm comfortable now.
Mm-mm. There's no need. I think you're going to see a lot of that, and not to get off topic, but
there is no topic.
Yeah, there's no topic, but I speak to people in all different industries because I'm just always interested in the future. And it seems like efficiency has actually gone up in places where you think it wouldn't, with people working home, even in, I brand TV networks, and even in TV networks, I'm like, how do you run a TV network and create promos and do all the complicated team oriented stuff that you do? And they're telling me that it's actually more efficient. So they figured it out using technology, how to work together, how to share ideas and not have to waste time commuting. So it's an amazing time. And, what I do without technology and the ability for, I work with a lot of music producers as well as agencies and brands, the ability for people to create at home in using technology, and for me to be sitting in on recording sessions in South Africa or London or wherever, via my computer is a pretty amazing thing. So
anyway. Explain to us, Marco, about, because I wasn't actually clear. That's why I wanted to learn more about this idea of music intelligence. What is that exactly?
So this is something that no one is really doing yet. And let me back up a little bit to explain why it's a proprietary thing for me. So my background is pretty strange. I was very 100% music. Like I was playing the violin when I was 3. I was in Juilliard when I was 11.
Oh, wow.
And I have a very strong background in music. But then I went into college for business, and I worked on a trading floor at JP Morgan for 8 years, trading bonds and analyzing investment grade fixed income securities. And then I went and decided that my real talents really are in music. So then I went and started a jingle house, which is like the old model of how to service the advertising industry. Mm-hmm. And then that was just like, everyone in music and advertising was a jingle house. It really was kind of like, you need a competitive advantage. And then I learned about the planning side of music, which really was underserviced, and there was no discipline around it. I mean, the fact is music is such an incredibly powerful tool for marketers and an incredible form of communication. It really is. People don't think of it as a form of communication. They think of it as an art, but it's a way of speaking to people directly, you know, emotionally, of evoking something. So it's also a very difficult thing for marketing people to be able to talk about, or most people are afraid to express opinions about it. So it's relegated to this kind of like end of the line tactical, oh, we have a commercial, let's find someone to put a piece of music on it. And it's just been stuck there forever. While it really should be up in the top level marketing mix for brands that are trying to communicate around the world, especially now that the whole world is sound on, right? Mm-hmm. So
No, I agree. Not to cut you off, but that's what I tend to do here. You are absolutely correct. I just announced my run for California State Senate in the 2022 election. And even though I have announced it and mentioned it, I haven't completed my website, and I haven't put the website or really any marketing collateral out there. And one of the first things I wanted to do was have a jingle created to have the feel and the theme of the message that I want to put out into the world. So I agree. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's, try and watch your favorite scene from your favorite movie without the sound, without the music, and
it totally
changes. Yeah, right. So, so to answer your, in a roundabout way, to get back to your question on music intelligence, most people in this space, sonic branding is becoming more and more of a big thing. Like sonic branding, people think of it as Intel, you know, ding, 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 you know, little sonic logo at the end of a spot, but it's really grown, is growing into what it needs to be, much more mature, much more holistic. We have touch points everywhere, smart speakers, podcasts, internet, social media, TV, radio, in store. I mean, everything it makes it sound, and brands need to be consistent, you know, so they need to have kind of an identity to them. So sonic branding is evolving, which is very exciting for me at this point. And music intelligence is a smarter way for brands and marketers to be able to get their head around it. So it's basically, to boil it down, it's a sophisticated process, but I kind of learned this on Wall Street, if you could believe it, and in business school. You can break things down into numbers, into math. It doesn't mean that everything you're breaking into math is objective. Some of it's subjective, but as a music supervisor and the people that I work with to analyze markets, we use our opinions and give everything a number at the end of the day. So for example, if I'm doing sonic branding for Oxygen Network, I will look at all the other networks that they're competing against, and we'll look at, you know, a lot of different pieces of collateral, and then we'll analyze over 500 variables, music variables, if you can imagine such a thing, and give them numbers. And then we look at best of breed brands that are out there. Maybe there's something that Nike or Coca-Cola is doing that makes their brand feel a certain way that Oxygen might be interested in capturing some of that. We'll analyze those brands as well. And at the end of the day, we end up with tens of thousands of variables. It's tedious, which is probably why no one else does it, but we're able to actually have data about something as elusive as music and sound and how they're using it. And then with that, we're able to have real communication with not just the creative person at the agency, but with the marketing people. I mean, I seldom do a project where I don't end up sitting with the CMO at some point and explaining, this is what you actually sound like. This is how your competitors sound. Here's the opportunities for you to stand out. Here's what we've learned from these other brands that are out in the market from how they're using music and sound. Here's some new ideas that you've never thought about of how to use music to propel your social media, et cetera. We just learned so much through this music intelligence process, and we're able to use marketing tools like positioning grids and all these things that marketing people are used to. And all of a sudden, they're able to treat music as something that they could talk about strategically, just like they do everything else. And it elevates the role of, this is really kind of my evangelical. I want to elevate music to where it belongs.
Yes.
Up in the marketing mix, because
yes,
it can do so much, and it's a universal language. So these global Absolutely. Brands need to get their heads around it. So
absolutely. And with you here today, you can help many of not only the global brands, because this is all new to me, but I see Rajesh, his head nodding in marketing. He has some ideas, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest first before we continue the conversation, Mr. Robin Waite, who is the founder of Fearless Business, a business accelerator for coaches, consultants, and freelancers. From 18 years old until 22, Robin worked as a systems analyst for a medical device company, putting systems into play. Robin increased efficiency and decreased costs, helping to make the company's 50% more profitable. For the next decade, Robin ran a successful marketing agency serving over 250 clients. He delivered workshops and masterclasses to over 1,000 business owners on subjects including marketing, product architecture, pricing, websites, and more. Good morning, Robin. How are you?
Good morning. I'm really well, thank you. I think I need some of that technology that Rajesh mentioned earlier on. I've had two power cuts today, which is the first time in about 4 years, and it's been really unfortunate. But so I'll be investing heavily in Tesla's, you know, Powerwall and some solar panels and all sorts of things, I think, after today. But I'm good, thank you.
You are welcome. Thank you just for being here. Now, you listen to most of the conversation, specifically, you know, a lot. You have a lot in common with Rajesh. Then again, I'm like, okay, you have a lot in common with Chelsea because she's in the whole coaching aspect. And then I'm listening to Marco, and Marco's talking about branding and being fearless and what he does. I'm like, okay, What are your thoughts so far, Robin, on the other guests and what they had to say?
I'm fascinated by kind of the diversity of the guests that we've got on, actually, in terms of like all of the things that you cover. And then I never knew that like the jingles that you hear are so scientific. So it's really fascinating listening to Marco. And I'm a big fan of data. You know, a lot of our clients, so I deal a lot with sort of small business owners, and they tend to kind of stop themselves from doing stuff. And I'm like, go and gather the data first and then tell me you can't do something. So it's really nice to hear, Marco, that you go out and not just like one or two data points, but like tens of thousands just for like a really short piece of like music. It's amazing.
Yes, absolutely. So tell us about your Fearless business and how you can help business owners.
So Fearless business, first of all, I always have to tell people it's not about being reckless. It's about fearing the things in business ever so slightly less that are going to stop you from achieving your goals. So, you know, most people nowadays, you know, and I come from a marketing background myself. So I spent 12 years running a marketing agency. And all the while we were dealing with people who were like, we just want more clients, get us more leads. And marketing's like changed quite dramatically. So when I built my first sort of commercial website back in 2004, you know, all you needed was a business card, a website, and a, you know, turn up to a BNI networking meeting and you were made to get clients, right? But
right.
In 2003, Zuckerberg was in his pants building Facebook, you know, in his dorm room at Harvard. And we didn't have, like nowadays, we've got Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all these different platforms and channels and like routes to market. It's a really difficult place, I think, actually. To it's quick and easy to get a business out, but it's very difficult to get found. And so I set up Fearless Business as a coaching practice in 2016 to kind of, I noticed that a lot of people were so focused on marketing, actually it detracted them from like the bare bones of their business. And I noticed that a lot of business owners are in such a rush to go and get money and get clients that they haven't laid the foundations really well for building a successful business. So like, for example, they haven't got their offer straight. They're not clear on exactly what product it is that they're selling, let alone what target market they're sort of offering that product to. And a lot of our clients, especially in the small business world, they don't come from a background of having done a business like an MBA or things like that, or have the experience that, you know, me and all the other panelists have got today, for example. So all of the stuff that I kind of wished I'd known 15 years ago, I now teach people, especially around things like pricing and not getting stuck charging time for money, like charge based on outcomes and results, like the amazing work which you do for your clients. Like every time you sell an hour of your time, it's like selling a piece of your soul to somebody else. You can never get it back. So, and I'm deeply passionate about seeing small business owners, you know, once they start to transform and get those basic foundations right, their business just takes off. And that's the thing which kind of I get really excited about.
I can see you're excited. I see you have a passion for it. One of the things that I found interesting in what you had to say was, I felt like you almost made a disclaimer at the beginning where you're like, not reckless, you know, and it reminds me of when I speak to some of my clients sometimes is I'll have what I think is one conversation and maybe I need to work on being clear. And I'll tell them, you know, these are the things that you need to do. These are the steps that you need to do. Let's take these steps. And they'll come back and like, Sharifa, I did exactly what you said. I quit my day job and I did, I'm like, that's not what I said. Like, I did not say be reckless. Okay. I said, you know what I mean? And so you have to kind of make that clear at times.
Well, 100%. And I think it's also quite difficult though, because there are some decisions which need to be binary, yes or no. Like, we're just going to quit. And like, it's like, you know, jumping off a cliff and then building the plane on the way down. Some people need that push in order to get them started. Sometimes though, you know, let's make it binary. And if you're in a full-time job and thinking about setting up your own business, well, you can gradually whittle down the days and do 4 days and 3 days and 2 days. And gradually, as you build your revenue up in your business, you can make that gradual transition across. But it's the simple stuff. It's like, you know, how many times are people, they get petrified of like stepping into a room full of strangers. Like, but if you think about it, most business owners are no different to all the other business owners. Everybody who walks into that room for a networking meeting is scared about like speaking to other people and telling people about their products and facing that, you know, fear of rejection or whatever. So they're all going through exactly the same thing. So actually there's nothing really there to fear at all. You just got to get in there and just go for it. And at the end of the day, what's the worst thing that can happen? You might look a bit dumb, a bit stupid, like big deal. You walk away, you never get to see those people again. It's all going to be fine. you know, and we,
you
and
got
we
me, you got me at the, you'll never see those people again. But I have a very vivid imagination. So when you ask someone like me, what's the worst that can happen? Believe me, I can imagine some of the things that can happen. Well, I would always imagine myself, let me tell you, this is a true story, right? When I was running for Long Beach City Council, I would tell my team basically the same speech before every panel or every forum. I would say, okay, I'd be like this, you know, I'll be fine. I just, Lord, please don't let me wind up as a meme. That's my new prayer. Like, I just don't want to wind up as a meme. Has any, Chelsea, you laughing, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, I understand you.
It's like people never know what's going to be a meme. They make some face, they make some noise, and then all of a sudden that meme represents the new crying on Facebook.
Yeah,
it and then seems like people worry about like spilling a bit of coffee on themselves at a networking meeting or something, or just looking a bit silly. But the upside, like if they actually get like all good stuff always sits on the other side of it. You get through that little worry or concern, but imagine then getting a client on the other side of that. Like the upside far outweighs like the tiny little mishap that might happen at something like that.
Yes, absolutely. Rajesh, how are you?
I'm doing good. I was on mute because I just want to make sure there's no background noise that's coming into the show. But no, this is great. I mean, such a fantastic group of panelists. I love what everybody shared. Marco, a lot of what you shared is like really... Silicon Valley stuff right there. I mean, you're converting analog data into digital signals that can be tracked and measured. I would love to understand, what kind of technology you're using. You know, you mentioned tens of thousands of variables, so you're probably using some sort of AI already, AI ML.
Actually, no, there's no audio brain for that yet. There are people who have audio brains to analyze music, and they're doing some interesting things with it, but it's all very kind of cursory. I think it's like tempo and mood and genre and instrumentation. What we do is rather tedious, and I have to employ like a team of music supervisors to actually sit down and dive way deep. And because, like I said, a lot of it is subjective. Like, brands might be saying, you know, brands may want to convey their brand values, which are essentially adjectives, authentic, trustworthy, traditional, whatever. Mm-hmm. And how do you listen to music and say how much different pieces of music bring out those attributes? There are people who do that for a living. There are music supervisors who do that. You know, people who pick songs for movies and stuff and for ad agencies, for commercials. So it's very subjective, and I have to be frank about that up front. But it's the only way to get massive amounts of information in a form that you can take a step back and see where the patterns are and see where the outliers are. There's no other way to do it. You know, I think that's why maybe this will eventually become a thing. But at the moment, we're the only ones who do this because it's time consuming. And it's worth it for brands that are dealing with the master brand, because that's their most important asset is the brand. So it's worth, you know, I go around and give talks about putting music first. And it's just, if you just give yourself an extra month or so to think about it before you jump in and start making something, the results are, you know, then you have results that last forever as opposed to 2 months. Yeah.
So can you like listen to a commercial and then know like, oh, they've got it right, or they've totally missed the mark on whatever music they chose?
Yeah, yes, as close as we can. I mean, if we know what they're trying to achieve.
Even like without going into the data points, like you as like someone who's just watching TV and a commercial comes on, you're like, yep, they missed it. Or like,
yeah,
they're pretty on point.
Yeah.
Have you trained your ear enough to do that? That seems crazy. I mean, cool, but like.
Yeah, yeah.
In a crazy kind of way.
Crazy. Yeah. Maybe it is what I do, maybe a little crazy, but because no one else is doing it, there's a reason. But I try not to be too judgmental, but it's impossible for me. I spend so many hours analyzing music. And then, you know, the second part of what we do is after we help brands figure out what everyone's doing and a reason for who they should be sonically and why they should do it and how they should do it, then we do it for them. So I spend the other half of my time, which is the really fun part, working with amazing creative talent and as a creative director. So I'm listening to their music. So I'm constantly judging music. So it's hard for me to watch a movie without just thinking about the music. It almost takes away from the movie.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea, I bet you probably have quite a good gut instinct. Whenever you see a business, you're probably like, oh, I wouldn't do it like that.
Well, I have a really good gut instinct for messaging because my business before Business Fish is a copywriting agency, and I still have that copywriting agency, but we were like, you know, really kind of like higher end and like really focus on conversions and getting attention was the main two things that we did for the client. So it's very easy for me to tell like this business is going to stand out in a good way, or this business is just going to get like crushed under everyone else because they're not doing anything interesting, at least in their copy or the way they're putting things across.
I just want to ask one question. Can I ask a question, Robin? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. But yesterday, if you would have been on yesterday's show, because one of the topics that we asked, we had a journalist on the show. And we had one of the guests who was an accountant. So I asked the journalist the question, you know, we always get clients that may have products or services that may just be basic, you know, no offense to the accountant, but accounting is kind of basic. It's like, there's no way to make it really sound sexy or, you know, special or unique, like what Marco is doing. So how do you take a message that is pretty basic and make it outstanding?
Yeah, well, that's where like the person's personality would come in, and where the personality of the firm would come in. And you can really like, because everybody does what they do for a different reason or from a different driving place, like a different emotional place. Like we all do what we do for some emotional reason. So like if I were working with a client to pin down that messaging, I would find that out and bring that to the surface alongside like whatever their basic services are, like bookkeeping, filing taxes, payroll, whatever. And that's where it really starts to stand out. And then, so as a journalist, you lead with like the nut of the story, what's most interesting. So you lead with that, you attach people to your message emotionally, and then you bring them in with the facts. And then when people are sold emotionally, the facts just follow up rather than just like being boring at first and then trying to push it over the edge with like emotion. It doesn't feel natural. It's not the way humans make decisions. So you kind of dig deep to find out what that is, and you bring that more to the surface. And then of course, like some accounts are better than others, and you can there's like emotions and facts, emotions and logic. So you can use the logic side of that to showcase that, but it's always emotions first.
Mm-hmm. Excellent answer, Robin.
I was just going to, did you ever have any like trepidation about launching yourself as a business bitch?
No.
It's just like, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you have to. You've got to back yourself with a name like that.
Yeah.
Did anyone around you have any trepidation?
No, like
mom,
I mean.
You know, mom, what did mom say?
Well, I didn't really ask them or tell them beforehand. I just told them after. And then the day before I launched it, I was like, hey, I have this new thing. I'm going to put it on Facebook tomorrow. So if it like any extended family says anything, then yes, you already know about it. But they didn't really care. I don't think.
Nobody said like, why Chelsea? Why? There's many other names.
I think like my mom is very like, she's more quiet and conservative and proper, and she used to get mad at me for saying curse words and stuff, but now that I'm older, she's just gotten used to it, and she can't control me. So I mean, not like in a bad way, I wasn't a bad kid or anything, but she just kind of goes with it, I guess.
Hey, sometimes you have to go with it. Rajesh, you're in marketing. Do you have those moments sometimes when you get the client and she's like, I'm business bitch, market me. What do you say?
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten clients like that, but I mean, this is a tough one. I mean, Chelsea is doing something pretty bold actually, right? I mean, because I think one of the things in marketing, and Chelsea pointed out some bit of this, is that you're gonna resonate with some people, you're not gonna resonate with some people. So I guess the strategy of saying that, hey, this is the target market I'm going to go after, and I'm going to stand out with a name in this case, right? And that's who I am, and I feel good about it. I think that's very important, right? I mean, am I comfortable actually carrying that brand? I mean, I am the brand, right? I mean, that name is associated with me. So I think that's actually the first thing that's important. So if Chelsea feels comfortable projecting, right, that persona, that name, that image, and everything else that comes with it, I think is really all there is to it. But it is going to alienate some folks, right, who are going to be off and they may never engage even right with the brand, which is okay, right? I mean, because that's not the group that you're going after, but maybe, you know, in some ways it's better to be hated or really somewhere in between. If you're somewhere in between, you know, you never really can get traction. So in that way, kind of, I think it's pretty interesting.
So basically you subscribe to the even bad news is good news because you made the news philosophy.
Well, clearly it's helping some people, some people power. I think in general, yeah, visibility is important. I mean, right, I think it's just really hard to stand out now with just such a huge fragmentation of channel, just digital channel, right? What makes a brand really stand out? And I think Marco spoke to some really beautiful aspects, actually, because I think the thing he's bringing up is more around the more emotional aspects of the brand, right? And I think that is where really the hook is. And not just in a bad way, but I think as human beings, I think we seek to identify with themes and concepts that are pretty deep, right? So I think music brings that out. And I think Chelsea mentioned about how a journalist writing an article, right? I think you lead with the emotion first. I think so that is really the place to go. So I think, yeah, customers and prospects, I mean, are looking to make an emotional connection with the brand, with you, really, right? As a small business owner, really, how do I infuse who I am into my brand? And I think that's really pretty important. I mean, as a business coach, I'm sure I think everybody would agree that if you don't do that effectively, then clients will have a hard time, kind of coming to you. I mean, then you
absolutely
five yes. other people.
Five other people, absolutely. Marco.
I was just going to say, you know, let's not forget ad memorability is probably one of the most important aspects of when you're judging at ad quality is ad memorability. And if you ask someone a year from now, do you remember the companies that were on this round table? Everyone's going to remember Business Pitch. You know, it's pretty strong. And obviously I think it also shows, you know, your assumption is that there's humility involved in calling yourself Business Pitch. So I think it's pretty strong. It's a strong name, has a good ring to it. It's memorable. As long as people don't take it literally.
Yeah.
So yeah. Marco, let me just ask you this. When you listen to it with a musical ear, I don't know if this is how it works, but I'm going to ask, do you just hear a certain theme or a certain tune or something that would go with Business Bitch?
That's a really funny question.
Yeah, nothing's popping into my head. I wouldn't probably use bitch as my focal point. Right. I would probably do what she said, which is dig down, find out what the actual essence is, and find a way for music to define what Business Pitch is as opposed to the word.
Yeah. Find that emotion.
Music would carry that, do the heavy lifting.
You know? Yes. Because
music does mean, it's amazing. We do exercises called mood boarding. Mm-hmm. It's taken from the visual branding people where they put images up on a board and it allows people to talk about colors and shapes and, you know, things like that. So we do that mm-hmm. with sound. And we do it about very, about adjectives, you know, and we do it with the brand stakeholders who knew who their brand is. And to them, daring might mean something different from someone who jumps off of cliffs, you know. So we listen to different pieces of music quick, you know, little 5-10 seconds. And then we rate them. And then it's amazing how sound and music means it gets the same message across to all different types of people. There's so much unanimity in how they rate things that shouldn't be easy to rate. And it's so, that's why I go back to this, you know, I was practicing an hour a day before I was talking. So to me, maybe it's a little bit more clear that music is a form of communication, even more so than words. I'm better at one than the other. And what's really cool is that it's universal. It gets across the language barriers and the cultural barriers. Music means the same thing to people all over the world. I branded Al Jazeera TV, Al Jazeera English, and I was in Qatar doing these mood boarding exercises. And the stuff that my music supervisors came up with in LA and New York were really ringing true with people on the other side of the world who were trying to convey their ideas, which were very foreign to our ideas, because music is a universal language. I think its roots go so far deeper than language, so far back. It's such a powerful tool. It's just hard for people to figure out how to deal with it. But anyway, I guess.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like I went and I picked out music for my podcast when I started my podcast about a year and a half ago. And I just went to one of those websites where you get these songs written by musicians. It's like instrumental. So I picked one out and I like it. And it's good. And I think it like fits the vibe of the podcast. But then like last year, Black Friday, I heard it in a commercial and it was like the Kohl's Black Friday commercial was using that same music. And I was like, whoa, that's
different things.
Yeah. Totally different things, but like the same music.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. They're telling different stories. But Robin, one of the things that you help entrepreneurs and business owners with is, like we talked about earlier, just being fearless, taking fearless steps with their business. Because often what we try to do is play it safe, or we look at what the competition does. And so we're scared to do what we want to do. What is some advice you can offer?
One of the main things that people are fearful around is money. So talking about sort of how to price their products and services. And I hate to say it, and this may sound slightly contrite, but like the one goal in business is to make money, right? So why are we so afraid of it? Why when somebody says, how much is it to us, do we kind of retreat like Gollum with our ring and kind of don't really, you know, we don't like step into our own confidence and like shout about the amazing results we get, and this is why we're so expensive. Mm-hmm. So again, I always try and break it down for people as well. You've got to work out, like, if you start with your goals in mind. So let's say, for example, if you want to get a six-figure business going, so $100,000 a year, you can have one client paying you $100,000, or 10 clients paying $10,000, or 100 clients paying, you know, et cetera, all the way down. But most people they kind of start a business out because mum, dad, brother, aunt, whatever says, oh, you'd be really good at that, you should go and start selling it. So they jump out there and they don't really make much of a plan, let alone kind of look at their goals and start to reverse engineering it. And I know you were talking about accounting being boring, but we had a client.
I said it was basic. I don't want to offend accountants.
Misquoted you, sorry.
That's how rumors get started.
Yeah, absolutely. So basic. So, you know, but most people kind of just don't really look at, they ignore the numbers. They kind of bury their head in the sand. And actually, so we had a client who did something basic. They sold WordPress websites and they were charging in pounds, £8 a month. So $10, like, for example, for a month for hosting and support. But they wanted to get to a point for their family where they had £3,000 a month coming in so that they could take the summer off to spend with their children, you know, for over like 4 or 6 weeks over the summer, which is a lovely thing to do. And I was like, quick maths, great. So you can handle like 400 clients then. And then, yeah, international signs of stress. No, we couldn't possibly handle that many clients. I was like, okay, well, how many can you handle? And he said 100. So I was like, okay, well, how could you get you to a point whereby you could handle 400 clients then, like four times the number of clients? He said, well, I could hire people on £3,000 a month. You can't really afford to hire people for that. And the simple thing was, we had to find a way for them to charge more for the same service. So we ended up kind of increasing their service level agreement. We made the whole thing much better and got them to a point whereby they could confidently charge £50 a month for the same service. So five times the price. And of course, that meant they needed far fewer clients. So they weren't spinning their wheels on marketing the whole time. It took them a while to get there. You know, it still took them sort of a good 18 months, close to 2 years to get to their goal. But that first summer when they got their 3K a month coming in recurring without needing another new client so they could just focus on their family, made all the difference. But I think had they been left to their own devices, they never would have come to that conclusion. Or like me, it probably would have, like in my agency, it took us about 8 years before we were like, oh, we should put our prices up. And the penny dropped and we kind of got the economic side of things. So for me, it's like money should be like a very black and white like measure of where you're at in achieving your business goals. It shouldn't be used as a barometer of success. I think that's where people misquote it, where you see all these entrepreneurs kind of going around, you know, brandishing their nice watches and their fast cars in the garage and all this kind of stuff. That for me is like, that's not entrepreneurship. That's not true entrepreneurship. That's just like showing off. Actually, you should just look at what's going to make a business work for the lifestyle that you want for yourself.
I agree. It was gold. There was a lot of gold in what you had to say. We really don't have enough time to pick it all apart. But what you said reminded me of two instances in my personal life. One of the companies, the last companies that I worked for as a sales trainer was American Express. And as a trainer, one of the first things we were told to train day one orientation is simply American Express is a for-profit corporation. Like that was the part of my job description to get people to understand we are a for-profit corporation. We are here to make money. They wanted people to go in. This is American Express, you know, so they want people to go in knowing that this is what we are here to do. But I have found that it's always the nonprofits, I feel, that have more of a difficult idea understanding that even though you are a nonprofit, you still need money to operate. And so often when people's focus is on saving the world, they forget they need to pay the rent. So excellent topics, excellent conversation. We could go on because this is one of my favorite topics, but we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Rajesh.
All right. I'm here to help. I really want to be helpful. So if anybody can, you know, make use of what I've learned or what I know, I'm more than happy to engage. That's all.
You say that now, Rajesh. Your phone is about to ring in 5 minutes because I have 7 minutes left with you guys. But after that, your phone is going to ring because I'm going to say, how do we automate the roundtable talk show? That's my question. If you want to start thinking about it.
I already have some answers. Anyway.
Okay. Well, your phone is going to ring in 2 minutes then. Thank you, Rajesh. Marco, what do you have for us?
Takeaway. I hope it's whenever I talk about what I do, it always seems to be a totally new thing for people. So I like to teach and expose that music is so much more than it's being currently used by the professional marketing community and by brands. There's so much more that you can do with it. And I'm on a mission to expose that one project at a time. So, and especially now, the way the world has changed, we really are living in these sound on bubbles. And sound is something that people don't block. You know, we have sensory overload with visuals. And so everything just comes in, but it's diluted. But sound, there are studies that show that people invite sound, they like it, they don't try and block it, they try and connect with it, they like to share it. And there's a whole frontier of how brands can use sound. It's not always expensive. It's not always about a logo on a TV commercial, social media. People are sound on now. You know, there's ways to use sound to represent who you are and to convey a deeper meaning to everything that you do and add consistency to your brand. So I just want to open eyes. I'm leading a movement, I think, I hope so.
You are. You look like Marco Belushi, one of the Blues Brothers out there on a mission from God to get the sound on movement going. Thank you, Marco. I appreciate you. Chelsea, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I would just say it's okay to be impatient towards what you want, towards your goals, be impatient in demanding success for yourself. There's lots of people out there to help you. Robin, I'm sure would be happy to. I would be happy to. Your goals can be accomplished probably quicker than you imagine. So don't be afraid to go for it.
Mm-hmm. Powerful. Robin, what do you have for us?
I think you just stole the words right out of my mouth there, Chelsea. I was going to say something very similar. And I think a lot of people kind of, we're going through really tough times, the extraordinary times at the moment, with COVID and various other things around the world. And I think I see a lot of people kind of making excuses to not give something a go. Grown businesses through the dot-com boom and bust. I grew a business through the last financial recession back in 2007, 2008. And pushing through those was the best thing that I ever did, and being able to help business owners be able to step into that and actually, don't use COVID as an excuse. Use it as a reason to like push on and like make a roaring success of stuff. Like now is like the best time I think we'll ever have to launch a business. There is so much opportunity out there, and like things will get back to normal. And if you manage to get through this, you can get through absolutely everything. So JFDI. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. But I think I'm with the people who believe that it's the new normal. Like what Marco was saying earlier, he's going to be in his attic enjoying his life. That's his new thing. And I think a lot of people have found that. For me, for instance, I know if it had not been for this global pandemic, I would not have ever received or reached the level of success with the Roundtable Talk Show that I have, because business owners and entrepreneurs and all you important people would have said, you know what, Sharifa, I don't have time. I don't have time to sit down and talk with you. I don't do Zooms. I only do in-person interviews, but I've been able to get 5 guests a day, 5 shows a week, because to a certain extent, wherever we are in the world, we're all in the same boat. We're all trying to figure out this global pandemic that none of us have ever seen, whether we're 99 or 9, we've never had this experience. So we're figuring it out together. When you look at companies like Zoom, who they're, stock went up like 800%, I think it was. There are so many companies that have been able to pivot and be successful, exactly like what you were saying, Robin. Now, I just want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show doesn't mean you are not still important. You are very important. We still need your support. Please go ahead and share this show, but please don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. Please visit our guests. Follow them on social media. Go to their website. Send them a message. Send them an inbox. Send them a tweet. And when you connect with them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.